Thank you. So, as was mentioned, I'm professor, and I'm presenting on behalf of Steve Kimes, who sent me most of the slides, although, as he said, I was sure to put my own twist on it, and I have modified a few of the slides. So Steve actually is on the board of editors for the journal Ophthalmic Epidemiology, and he took over the place that I had held for several years. What I want to say is the token health services researcher, health economist on the board of editors. But, you know, it's largely an epidemiologic and clinically focused editorial board and not a health services research and health economics focused editorial board, although having people on there that focus on those topics as things increasingly move in that direction in the journal has been important. So for disclosures, Steve has consulted, and I have as well, with a variety of organizations. So ophthalmic epidemiology could be thought of as a premier journal concerned with public health issues related to vision and visual impairment. The impact factor in 2011, as you can see, was 1.4, and it has an international focus. I mean, certainly there's plenty of stuff from the U.S. studies and Haynes or other studies like that get published in the journal, but it allows for quite a bit of international variety. Some I've published information from the Gambia there, and given that Sheila West was the editor previously, a lot of trachoma work has been published there, so that tends to be international. But we certainly welcome articles from all over the world, and even though I'm no longer on the editorial board, I've been doing a lot of reviewing for them lately. The editorial board has experts from all around the world. It's represented by folks from Europe, folks from Asia, Australia, the U.S., The editor-in-chief is from the University of Sydney at this point in time. And when you're thinking about publishing there, the first consideration is it needs to be a public health discipline. Okay, and so what's worth thinking about, what exactly does that mean? Well, given the title of the journal, Ophthalmic Epidemiology, studies that are primarily epidemiologic in nature, of course, is one variation. Biostatistics. Now, you wouldn't necessarily find biostatistics methods papers in ophthalmic epidemiology, but certainly, given who's on the editorial board and given the focus, making sure that the statistical I's are dotted and T's are crossed is something that is very important for publishing in this particular journal. And I see the epidemiology and biostatistics as really going hand in hand together to make sure that the studies are good ones. But it's definitely an important consideration. Health behavior is an important area of public health as well, and certainly within the context of things that get published in ophthalmic epidemiology, there are a variety of health behaviors that contribute to eye health. And then health outcomes, and I think it's worth sort of thinking for a moment, what do we mean by health outcomes? Because we hear about outcomes research or patient-centered outcomes research in the United States, and it may not always be clear how broad or how narrow this concept of health outcomes is. So there's a few things you can think about. One is physiological outcomes, the health of the eye. Quality of life, we talked a lot about that at presentations this morning, and there's a variety of measures of quality of life related to vision at this point, ranging from the vision function questionnaire, measures of quality of life, generic health-related quality of life measures. Lots of people have been interested in studying how they change or how sensitive they are to changes in eye health. And economics, which is not just a focus of the work that Steve and I have done, but is something that is becoming increasingly important. And linking eye health to economic outcomes is something that's being published more and more, and certainly the Journal of Ophthalmic Epidemiology has welcomed this as a topic. There was even a particular issue a few years back now where we focused on cost effectiveness and health economics outcomes specifically. So going back to the first consideration, in addition to the fact that it needs to be from a public health discipline, obviously it must be vision related, and international work, as I mentioned earlier, is encouraged. The other thing that I should mention, despite all of the comments about biostatistics, is that qualitative research is encouraged, is welcomed. And it's not a journal that would shy away from that as long as it is qualitative work that contributes to epidemiological thinking about the problems in vision care. features of papers that would be accepted by ophthalmic epidemiology, you can think of it as three S's. The first is succinct, no more than 4,000 words. Of course, compared to some journals, 4,000 words is generous these days. But in general, it does have to be something that you can convey in a relatively succinct way. You're not going to get 5,000 words for this journal. The second is specific. It really needs to focus on a single subject. And the best papers and the papers that are easiest for the editors and reviewers to follow are papers where the study hypothesis or the objective of the study, particularly in economic evaluation, there's not always a hypothesis, but there's more of an objective the way it's stated, really should appear in the final paragraph of the introduction. And that's probably true for many journals at this point in time, that you just have to come straight to the point and get to what it is that the paper is going to do. And then significant. The importance needs to be made clear. Part of that, focusing on some of the things from the prior presentation, is really laying out in the introduction, you know, why is it that this is an important topic? And then not only is the importance of the paper and the importance of the research question made clear, but the methods really ought to reflect the best practices, whether that's the best statistical practices, you know, as more and more studies that have cluster randomization, for example, if it's a randomized trial, move into more sophisticated ways of controlling for the cluster randomization, or if it's an economic evaluation, focusing on the most recent recommendations as to the quality of economic evaluations, or as you'll see later, you know, for clinical trials in general, there are specific methods and specific criteria that are now expected to be held to when you publish in those areas. So the elements of a report of a study: the introduction, methods, results, discussion, with a mention of limitations, and conclusion. And I've got a slide or so on each of those. So for the introduction, you'd want to describe what the motivation for the research question is. Why is it important? Given that it's ophthalmic epidemiology and there needs to be a public health focus, the public health implications of the work should be made clear. And so it's not just about, you know, clinical practice, but it's about why this is important in a larger public health or population health framework. Clearly describe previous reports that have addressed the research question or a very similar research question, talking about what the quality of the previous research would be. And then, of course, when you describe the previous work, that provides the authors with an opportunity to describe gaps in the literature and how the work that is being submitted will fill some of those gaps. If we think about different types of gaps in the literature, one could be geographic. So maybe a similar research question had been answered in one country, and this is a study being done in a different country to ask, you know, did what we found in the United States also apply in Europe or sub-Saharan Africa or Asia? Could be a subpopulation. Sometimes you've done a generic study or a general population study in one of, you know, in the United States or another country, but we're interested in, is this descriptive of a subpopulation's behavior or eye care outcomes or economic evaluation as well? Could also be a gap in terms of recency. Maybe the last time the topic was addressed was a decade ago, and there is a justifiable reason that we want to revisit this topic with new data. And sometimes it's a variation on the question. You know, a small variation on a research question may not be enough to attract the attention of the editor and the reviewers, but if you can say, you know, we've asked a related research question, but I need to tweak this because there's a new public health issue, there is a new disparity issue, there's a new economic issue, there's a new outcome measure, and even though we've asked about outcomes like this before, with this new measure we might find something new because it's been shown to be much more sensitive. Whole variety of things. But those are a variety of ways that it could fill in a gap in the literature. In the methods section, you want to summarize the methods briefly in the first paragraph, kind of giving a preview of what they're going to read in the rest of the methods section. Describe the type of study design employed and the rationale for that study design. Certainly not all studies have to be clinical trials, and not even all outcome studies have to be clinical trials, although that facilitates the causality inferences. But if it's not a clinical trial, why not, and what study design was used? For clinical trials, you want to follow the principles of the CONSORT group, and Steve gave the website for that here. And that would include spelling out very clearly what are the inclusion and exclusion criteria for the sample, What was the intervention that was being studied in the clinical trial? What are the outcomes that were supposed to be measured? And particularly expecting that those will be specified a priori. That's part of sort of the best practices in clinical trials at this point. And then the statistical methods that were used, in particular, you know, again, where they spelled out in advance, was there anything that was ad hoc about them after the study was conducted? That just repeated those points for other study designs. It could be a variety of designs, cohort study, case control, descriptive or economic evaluations. And, you know, as a guiding principle, you'd want to follow principles that are similar to those of the CONCERT group when it comes to just describing the methods clearly and concisely. And thinking about, you know, for any of these study designs, who was in the study, why were they in the study, what methods were used, and what was, you know, what is it that's being tested or compared or described, so that the authors and the editor can make sense of the manuscript as easily as possible. In terms of the results, again, a guiding principle throughout in terms of the way most reports are laid out for ophthalmic epidemiology is to summarize briefly what the readers are going to see in the rest of the section in the first paragraph. For clinical trials and epidemiological studies, include a figure describing the disposition of the study participants. Again, this is specified in the CONCERT guidelines. You know, here's all the people who we screened or thought might be eligible, and then, you know, what happened going throughout in terms of how you got down to the final analytical sample or the final group that was included in the study. Include a table 1 that describes the characteristics of the study participants. Again, this is very common in a variety of journals. You know, it's your basic demographic characteristics or basic clinical characteristics when it comes to a randomized trial or an epidemiological study. For an economic evaluation, a lot of times what reviewers and editors are interested in knowing is what are the parameters that are going into the economic evaluation and where did that information come from? Again, it's just a slight variation on the overall theme that the readers should be aware of the basic description of who is in the study or the parameters that motivate the economic evaluation as the first part of reporting on the results. And then describing the findings, and I think, again, one message here is to be parsimonious with tables. There is a limit to the number of tables, and so you want to try to convey the information in as clear and concise as a way as possible. And again, reiterating on the point that was made earlier, you know, I go back far enough where, you know, you used to sort of walk people through the entire table, and I think that's generally recognized that you don't need to do that these days, and things that are very clear from the table can be left from the table, highlight a few things, elaborate on a few things, but you don't certainly need to describe everything that's in every table in the results section of the paper. The discussion section, again, in the first paragraph, briefly describe the study and the findings, sort of reflect on it. Describe the public health implications of the findings. Again, what are the bigger picture? Well, how does this affect population eye health? Or what are the epidemiological or other public health aspects of the study? Address any differences between the findings in the paper that you're submitting and previous findings. Or point out where your findings support previous work. And this is a challenge because sometimes if it's a crowded field, you need to be selective about what you talk about in terms of how it either contradicts or supports previous findings. And I think the other key thing to think about is not just to point out where it contradicts or supports previous findings, but to then take that one step further and talk about why you think it does and how that helps our thinking about the generalizability, which is the next bullet point, or new opportunities for research and new things that we have to address and ask why we're finding things that are slightly different. In terms of limitations, few things that just about every study should focus on. Any threats to the internal validity of your study. Those might include things like loss to follow-up and problems with measurement. That's certainly not an exhaustive list of possible threats to the internal validity of the study, but those are some of the most common things, particularly when it comes to outcomes-related research. You know, we try to develop outcome measures that are relevant to and sensitive to changes in vision and eye health, but it can be very difficult sometimes, and almost all patient-reported outcomes have some type of threat to their validity. Describe the threats to the external validity of the study. Is there any reason to be worried about selection bias in the sample? And then, of course, discuss what was done to minimize the limitations and the implications of the presence of the limitations and the implications of anything that you did to minimize the threats to validity. Now, the limitations section tends to be just a paragraph, sometimes maybe two, but it can be one of the most important ones in terms of, you know, owning up to what it is about the study that, you know, suggests there should be some caution taken with interpreting the results. And a lot of times reviewers, you know, are very keen on authors being upfront about what the limitations of the study are. In the conclusion should follow logically from and not go beyond the findings of the current study, although certainly it can be contextualized by past studies. And the conclusion should include either a policy recommendation, a practice recommendation, something that's broader about public health, or even it can be just a future research recommendation, although generally I'd say for this journal, there's always room for more research. It's almost a given. But it's important to have one of those other three types of recommendations as well to maximize the chances that a manuscript will be accepted. Thank you.